This is the Better Architecture Podcast, and you're listening to Season 2, Design Media India 2024 edition of The Talks.
Hello everyone, this is your host Shubhayan, and a warm welcome to Episode 6 of the Season 2 of the podcast, that's Design Media India 24 edition. Today, we have with us in the house journalist Shiny Varghese. If you're an enthusiast and you read mainstream, that is newspapers, then you have read her columns. Shiny writes for Indian Express, she is a journalist, and writes extensively on built environment and much more. Welcome to the talk, Shiny ma'am. I hope you and yours are doing all good.
Yes, we are. Thank you so much, Shubham. We're well and good, blessed to be able to survive.
That's really great and assuring to hear. So now, before moving forward, you all know the drill. Head to the description to check out ma'am's bio and her media profiles as well. And having done that, let's come back to the topic, design media. Or say any alternate connotation of this field, architectural media, architectural journalism, or any similar term. You've been writing about buildings in the mainstream media for some good time now. So from your perspective, how do you define this terminology, design media? Or say architectural media, how would you relate? What's the idea behind the same?
Do you mean in India or do you mean across the world as such?
Maybe we start at home and then we move to global?
Right. As we know, in India, of course, when we think of design media, we are compelled to imagine magazines first. And to a certain extent, also now, digital media as well. But primarily, your mind certainly goes to certain magazines because of the kind of reach it has, but also because of the kind of visual effect it has. And there is a third place for critical reviews, but that's not so much even in design media in our country, as opposed to internationally, be it any of the international newspapers that you pick up or magazines that you pick up, where you do see a very critical analysis of architecture happening. That isn't the case in India. In ours, we are a lot more visually led. We are a lot more dictated by what a client who puts an ad in a newspaper or a magazine would want. So in that way, it's still very client-driven, which is, I think, a reflection of how the industry itself functions, because our models are still very client-driven of building and manufacturing, if I may call it.
Right, right. And internationally, how's it looking like?
Internationally, to begin with, you have magazines that sometimes are linked to the industry itself, meaning that it would be to either to a gallery or to an industrial house, so to speak, corporate house, which means that they might give you the privilege to be open in exploring different avenues, because end of the day, your reader is not just an architect. And the critical writing that you see abroad, you really don't see that in our country, like I mentioned. In newspapers especially, there is certainly an entire page sometimes in the NYT, for instance, that you will have an entire page dedicated to one particular project or one particular architect or an issue. It's not the same. That kind of space you don't get in Indian media. You get it in a magazine, but not so much in a newspaper.
I think very important takeaway for my audience, that one. Now, in the start, you said that Indian media in this industry is pretty client-driven. Do you think this is a good symbol or a bad symbol? Or is it just because of how it is evolved in parallel to businesses and economies in India and can't just be quantified like that? I mean, good, bad, your take.
I think there's both to it. The good part is that you are able to tell people what kind of innovations are happening because there's a client who's got a particular kind of paint or a particular kind of product which is marketed. So in that way, you get to know about innovations. Of course, I know that the industry itself reaches to architects directly, but for a layperson, it may not. And India has a very large population of people who do not employ architects to do their own homes. So it's primarily a person who's a contractor, which means that the homeowner is possibly looking at these magazines, looking at the products, and then making a choice. So in that way, it's a good thing that it reaches directly to the consumer. But what happens is that it takes away from what architecture actually should be. And that is where I think our design media per se I find that it's handicapped in some ways. I wouldn't like to use another word, because it kind of takes away from what it should mean to people and not just about postcard perfect kind of a space.
Right. I think I am in personal agreement to the phrase that you have used here. That's postcard perfect kind of space. The portrayal of it through whatever avenues that we are having. Another thing that I wanted to ask you about is how sugar-coated our standard architectural writing is. You know, nice flashy colors on matte print and the nice paragraph on the spread across has some heavy, nicely arranged but repetitive words written to justify the glamour. So, this sugar coating, is it because of the client-driven nature of the majority of this industry?
I think it's really because we don't have the vocabulary. For instance, when we get interns to write, when we have students who come in as interns or fresh graduates who come in as interns, when you look at their copies, quite often the copy is full of adjectives. If they have been to a play, they would say, oh, such a beautiful play. I'm just giving an example. I mean, nobody writes like that, but I'm saying that it's full of adjectives and full of the very literal visual, which means that they will see a red wall and say, oh, here was a red wall. And for the longest time, architectural writing in magazines was like that. It was about saying that I walked in, like when you enter the house, you see vitrified tiles and you see a Raza painting on the wall and you see X company chandelier on the ceiling. So it was that kind of very literal visual explanation of space. Whereas we all know that the space has nothing to do with either the tile or what's on the wall. It's how that space makes you feel. And so that is where I think we have a fundamental problem in design writing. So it's more than anything, it is really not having the vocabulary of expression.
Right. I absolutely didn't expect the answer to that question to fall along those particular lines. But well, I do agree that the architectural vocabulary is something that has been a major roadblock for the industry, I suppose. And I mean, it's not that it has already been talked of enough and people have said a lot about it, but well, nobody does anything about it, because I have always believed that this glitz and glamour is present because that's the only way to pay for all of it. And I guess that type of money, critical kind of stuff, serious journalism, etc., won't be able to bring you, I think.
Certainly, there is a monetary aspect to this. I mean, let's not deny that, because most of these design magazines, when you look at it, the first 30 pages, sometimes if you're lucky as a thick magazine, you will have only advertisements. So it's only, and advertisers also are very sure where they want the advertisement to be. Like, I was with a design magazine and we always had advertisements on the right of the page only, or of the magazine only, because that's when you flip a magazine, you always look at the right. Yeah, and then of course there is premium place for cover, there is premium place for that, and it's those kind of things. So there is certainly a monetary aspect and economics to this whole thing. But, and of course it makes for beautiful photos, yeah? Because everybody wants to make the magazine look pretty because it sells. I mean, jo dikhta hai wo bikta hai type of situation.
Yes, exactly. I think I'm quite annoyed by those strings of colored papers in print magazines and all that. But well, let's not go into depth and let's move to the next section of the talks. You are probably one of the hand countable few who are writing about the built environment in the mainstream media. From my understanding of terminologies, I'd call you a design journalist. So what I want to ask from you is, how did you get into this? What did the journey look like?
Right. I don't have a very long journey in design journalism. But I remember when I was still in college and I had a thesis I had to submit in college. It was my project was I had two projects. One was creative writing and one was journalism. And the creative writing project I picked up was in about this particular complex that is there in Chennai. I did my graduation post-grad there. It was a complex called the Karaikudi complex. So what they had done there was pick up these different elements from Karaikudi, which is this town in Tamil Nadu, And they had kind of recreated that in this particular place, and they had open, it was an open space, it had a restaurant, it had some, I forget what, but it had multiple things happening. It was primarily a public space. So I had written about that, picking up what the traditional elements were and talking about how they have kind of contemporarized it. And that was my exercise in creative writing. And in journalism, when I did my thesis, it was again on, so at that time I was in Bangalore for my journalism, and it was on Bangalore that time was just getting the new airport. It hadn't, the land was just bought. And so there were a lot of protests about this land because it was in terms of archaeological and heritage value, it was very, very important for archaeologists because there was a whole lot of new findings that they were wanting to explore. And they said the coming of an airport is going to ruin our understanding of our city, etc. And what that airport is going to do to the in surroundings, because it's way out, it's almost 2 hours out of the city. So my project was on that. So I never knew at that time somewhere that these were things that I really enjoyed writing about and I liked. So I started working, and I came to Delhi to, besides multiple other magazines that I worked with, my design journey really started with a magazine which the India Today Group was bringing out, which was called Design Today. Of course, now that magazine has shut, but even so, it was one magazine. The reason that I joined that magazine was because there was this wonderful article which was in a series done on the history of product design. So columnists had picked up different aspects of products, be it chairs or be it lights. And he had done the whole journey of what the history of each of these chairs was. So for instance, with the chair, how it moved from Eames to the Corp to everybody else. So it was that kind of a history he was mapping. And I thought that was fascinating because it kind of related to life in so many ways. It wasn't so much about just the idea of a chair and how the form was, but it's also about why it was done. So that was quite fascinating. And before you knew, that became the place I wanted to work. So in that magazine, we tried to bring in columnists who were presenting a different kind of architecture, who were talking about people, who were talking about spaces, who were talking about values. So it wasn't just about pretty picture. And so when Indian Express had an opening in Features, I said, here is one place I could certainly go to, because at that time, which was about 9 years ago, I think 8 years ago, there was no architecture writing as such. And at that point, I did not think that I'm going to be the voice of anything. It wasn't that at all. It was just that I knew that Express was where, for me, it was a homecoming, really, because the college that I studied journalism in was tied up with the Indian Express. They are the ones who started the college I studied in, the School of Journalism in Bangalore. So for me, it was a homecoming when I came back to the Express. And in the Express, I've been very blessed to have good editors who have seen the value in having someone cover architecture and someone write about the city in a different way, not just about reporting about a city, which my daily reporters do, but talking about other aspects of the city. So that's primarily been my journey so far. And at the Express, because we have a very different way that we look at news itself, which is not so much, again, we would not look at it like how a business newspaper would look at it. It would be a very different aspect. It's a down-up approach, basically. So that's also why the Express feels like a perfect fit, because I think, coming back to the primary thing, that architecture is really about people. It's about knowing the rights and the agency people have. It's about knowing the kind of air they breathe and how important that is, and the kind of connections people make. It's about basically empowering people to make better choices.
Okay. When you say architecture is about people, it definitely strikes a very dear chord with me, because we at Sthapatya have also been working on very similar lines. Now that you have been candid about the state of newspapers covering core architectural discourse, how has the effect of the same been on the Indian people? Like, what has the tenure change or a change in decade brought in the market? How has the public reacted to the shifts, and how do you envision the coming future?
So the tenure changes that have happened, I think people have now grown to realize that the kind of products they use, the kind of buildings they live in, it makes a big difference to the choices they make. Or rather, it's the choices they make actually it's a huge factor in the quality of life, let me say that. And that has, of course, certainly happened because of design media, because of the magazines, and because of what you have read as probably in a newspaper article. I mean, what started happening was that a lot of newspapers started carrying these single column kind of things on ways to bring in more light into your house or how to make use of small spaces. So these kind of things were very hands-on for people. And which earlier used to possibly not be there in a newspaper, you would have it certainly in a magazine. You have a magazine like Inside Outside for the longest time. And it had a superb reach. Even you could go to a railway station about 10, 12 years ago and still get Inside Outside. It's that kind of reach it had. So in a decade later, really, you have made it a lot more accessible for people to have some agency, to have some kind of, what do you call it, responsibility towards the way that they are using products or the way that they are employing these, be it a paint or be it a light, etc. People are now thinking about how efficient can a tap be, how efficient can my lights and electrical gadgets be. So all that certainly has come about. I mean, that awareness is certainly there. And people are thinking about green buildings and those kind of things, which 10 years ago wasn't really a lingo, so to speak. And going from here, where will we go? I think now, thanks to COVID, people are suddenly becoming so much more aware and realize it was a bad idea actually to close that balcony and turn it into a room, or to kind of completely strip your house of everything that is natural and textural and give it so much of artificial light coming in and possibly carpeted your whole floor, and you realize that that's such a bad idea. So it's those kind of, I think, really living through problem that you have realized that there are better ways to live. So in that way, I think COVID has taught us all so many. But I am hopeful also because people now want to, like, thanks to all the opinion pieces that we have and so much of writing that is happening across the board in the digital space, any print, on TV also. You have all these TV shows that do all kinds of design programs. Good or bad, we might say that it's too glossy, it's too niche, it's too all that. But it has made it so aspirational now that even if you go to a slum, people will want to get better tiles for their homes or a prettier looking curtain. So it certainly has that sense of, call it aspiration, call it whatever. It has certainly populated in a positive way, I would say.
Wow, okay, that was a very, very hard thing explained as easily as possible. So thank you so much for that. And I think this also gives our younger audiences a chance to reflect upon how the market has shifted. And okay, coming to young audiences, I will now ask you for some guidance. Say someone, a BR graduate or planning design graduate, wants to work in mainstream media as a reporter or as a journalist. Currently, in the present market, the possibilities seem very hard unless one has solid contacts and stuff like that. So how would you say youngsters should start out to be able to make it in the mainstream newsroom, working on the floor, say 4 or 5 years down the line? How should the process start, if you can help them out?
What I would recommend, so there are two ways to look at it. One is, of course, there are people who have been through a journalism school. I personally don't think that it will, like a two-year course in mass comm, really makes much of a difference. Probably shorter kind of courses help. But more importantly, we have some of the best journalists in the country, and many of them have not been to any journalism school. But what they have done is really observe a lot that is happening around them and make writing a part of their daily life. So that has really made a big difference to how you can get into a newspaper or something. Just be able to be curious, be aware of your surroundings, and also accept as many different truths as are possible. Because what happens as a person, I don't mean to say that people who are not journalists don't have other points of view, but quite often you are compelled as a journalist to be able to bring both sides of the story to the table. And that's therefore very important for you to argue your case both ways. And if to do that, you should be able to read as much and be able to explore and be kind and generous enough to allow different points of view to enter your mind, enter your thought system, your phone, really, you know, your Facebook, your Insta, all that. So three things. One is, of course, keep your curiosity alive. Two is write and read as much as possible. And third is to accept all kinds of comments and different points of view, different truths, like I said. So that's, I think, primarily, broadly speaking, that's what someone needs to do.
Okay. There are very strong pointers for all of you, my audience, especially the last one. That's be accepting. Well, okay, that being said, let's move on to the next part, and that's about fulfillment, financial or otherwise. I know that the overall financials in the field of code journalism is a hit, but just to give my listeners an idea, how rewarding is it seeing your name in the bylines on print and all?
If I can just take you back a bit to tell you about the joy of seeing your byline. In our paper, there is one simple rule. You're only as good as your last story. You could have done a fantastic investigative story, or you could have done a fantastic cover, but you're only as good as your last cover, which means that it's a constant process of writing and rewrite. And it's only for that day. It's only for that time. So it's a never-ending process, really. So having said that, about the financials, honestly, nobody comes to journalism to earn money, because it's a very sadly paying profession. So what I would advise is that, especially since the person has already got architectural degree, to anyway have a job on the side. But having said that, I mean, I'm a full-time journalist and all my colleagues are full-time writers or reporters. But we are also it doesn't pay poorly, but compared to what a corporate job would give you, journalism doesn't pay like that. So if you have to really kind of pay back your EMIs, you have to consciously be sure that this is what you want to do and that this is certainly the route for me. Then you will make your compromises. You will learn to live within your means and say, okay, I'm not going to be buying this month because I have to make ends meet. So it certainly, I will not deny that it's not the, but that doesn't mean anyone lives poorly. No? What I'm trying to say is that if you're making a comparative study, it certainly doesn't pay as much as a corporate job will, or if you're working in a really big architectural firm that you will get a certain kind of pay grade. That may not happen in a journalism thing. But as you go up the ladder, you will certainly get your rewards. I mean, it evens out. So, yeah.
Right. I like how you end with that as you go up, you get the rewards. And while I agree to that, I also understand that specifically in India, that comes with a caveat, I suppose. I mean, there are many places where you don't get enough even when you have been working for long. I mean, media is hard to survive.
Well, unfortunately, it really depends on where you are. So some publications really pay quite well. Some publications don't. The thing is that today, if you look at the market, digital media gives you much better money and TV pays you much better than print ever will. Only because of the advertisements and the kind of, what you call it, returns, so to speak, that these industries have, or rather these organizations have. So it is not something that is completely in that way the end of the road. What certainly happens is that if you, I know of freelancers, some of the very best ones will charge you somewhere between 5 to 10 rupees per word, which is a lot of money if you're writing like 5 articles in a month and you're writing about, say, anywhere between 700 to 1,000. So it depends on which publication you're writing for and also where you're placed. But yes, of course, like any place that you work for, you will have to work your way up. And that is the most difficult part, because then it's not just about your work, it's also about how you are as a person, and that also plays a role. So it's not just the work alone. That goes for any organization, no? It's not just media.
I absolutely agree with your response there. I think that gives a certain degree of clarity to the issue as well. Now, last thing before we move towards the last portion of the talk, as you have said, built environment coverage in our mainstream is kind of low and less now. So, looking from the opposite side, would you say that more built environment professionals need to pick up serious writing and just stick to it? What I mean to ask is, does built environment coverage in the mainstream need a boost? So what scopes lie there? Is there a need? How do you respond to this?
There certainly is a need to write more and for more news to come out on architecture and more ways to see architecture. So certainly there is a big scope for architects to take on journalism either as a full-time profession or to at least become part-time writers, become columnists. There certainly is a scope. There is a vacuum, actually. But having said that, the other part about architectural writing that I've seen in design media often is that there is a great level of jargon, if I may say so, that comes into architectural writing, which if you look at any of an architect's document on a particular project, you see it and that this is not meant for the common man to understand. And that is a fundamental problem in many architects' writing, that very few of them are able to articulate in a way that someone who's not an architect can understand. And that is where I think the discipline of writing comes for a person who's interested in architecture and design writing, that they are able to shed those many words and those many, that kind of shorthand which only an architect understands, to be able to explain it to, I don't mean dumb it down, but I mean to make it more relatable. Yeah, relatable to the person on the ground. So that is what needs to happen. But certainly there is scope. And like I said, Express is very, very blessed to have good editors who see the value in it and who allow me that space. I don't think there are other writers in other newspapers. They do write occasionally, maybe on a particular thing. It's an opinion piece or something. Or it might be like a history piece on a particular space. But to have that kind of dedicated writer, of course, I do other things as well. I don't only write about architecture, but the point is that they've given me that space, and I'm sure it will expand. That space has to expand. So unless the writing is of that kind of quality where the editor looks at it and says, yes, this is what I want in my newspaper, for which people need to know how to write and how to express themselves and how to, like I said, show the society, show people, show the world that there are other ways to view architecture and not just the glossy, glamorous kind of ways. Yeah.
Yes. And I believe that is quite a positive and inspiring response from you. Now, moving to the last phase here and a very, very important one. Say, for the future of the media avenues in architecture and design. Now, India produces a good number of few thousand architects per year, and we have a good number of people in the media domain now, with more adding per year. Again, we know that people doing the same kind of jobs tend to come together and associate, let's say IIA, ISOLA, ADI, ITPI, and so on and so more. But there exists no specific body for the design media professional still now. And that's my question. Say, how do you feel about an organization that looks exclusively at architectural media? I mean, is there a need? Should we be working towards something like this? What should be the agendas for such a body? And how do you say this body can shape the course of this incubating profession?
Right. I'm glad you asked that question because it takes us to a different space, which is about architecture and politics. Now, each of these organizations, be it your COA, be it IIA, or be it the Press Information Bureau that we have, PIB, all these organizations, what they primarily do is to affect policy, is to do something that will make a difference to the way that that particular group or that particular community of people have a voice. And if that is what is meant for writers to do as a body, then they have to be able to initiate a kind of, what you call it, some kind of a vision, which will say that, okay, we are gathering together so that we can effect change at the policy level. Because otherwise we can be a group of people who will come, have chai, have a drink, etc. However you want to amuse yourself and make your presentations and go away. But the point, I think, what will need to be addressed is, can we make a difference and can we make a difference politically? And if that is the thing, because I think end of the day, architecture is politics and architecture and is political. And therefore, the way a building comes up on a particular street should matter to everybody on that street and not just the agency that is actually laying out the pipes or clearing the trees. And if we can get there, which is a long, long way off, if we can get there, then we as a society would look very differently at the way that we even interact with each other or the way that we even imagine what our homes should be like and what our public spaces should be like. So yeah, so if that is where we want to go, then certainly we have to have a great vision for making that kind of a change. But otherwise, there's honestly no point. If you can't effect that kind of a change, then there's no point.
I think you have hit it right at the base of the problem. That is, unless we are able to bring in cognitive and intelligent changes, large, massive scale impacts on the populace, habitual changes, okay? There's no point. Right, cool. Now, given that we managed to get something like this done, there is an institutional framework and all that 5 years down the line, what kind of threats or threat do you foresee in this?
Yes, of course, it's a three-letter word, ego. So that we all know, and architects are hugely, that's a disease. So I can't, it's very few people who are able to set that aside and be able to look beyond that. So I see will be a fundamental problem. We already see it, no, in the COA, in the IIA. We already see those kind of fault lines that are there. And I'm not saying that it's there. I mean, everybody is perfect or every organization is perfect. As imperfect people that we are, we will create imperfect organizations. So there's no denying that. But the point is that to be able to come together, we have to be able to have a common vision. I'll give you an example what I heard. So there's this group of architects in Pune, or is it in Kolhapur? I think it's in Kolhapur, where they have, so as how an architecture project is given, where the person who quotes a better rate obviously gets it, because he gives you, I don't know, a swimming pool with your 3-bedroom house and quotes a cheaper rate. So that's normally how normal people would pick up an architect. No, say, chalo, this guy is cheaper than that guy. I mean, that's, I'm just kind of making a very general statement. But what these group of people, architects, did is that they created kind of a common contract, which was across all of them in that particular city, to say that whoever comes to us for a residential project, commercial project, industrial project, this is our contract. Which means that then you're not deciding on the basis of the money factor, but you're deciding on the space basis of design. You're deciding on sort of innovation. And I thought that was a fantastic way to kind of level the playing field, because then you are not basing your judgment on something as a lowest common denominator to say, you know, it's not on the... So I think in that way, it's that kind of vision that needs to happen, where you're thinking of it as a collective. Today, half the reason why we have so much of a problem with the Central Vista and these kind of projects is because constantly there are these, it's either you're with us or against us kind of a situation. And we do not have a situation where we do not have a consensus of any kind as a body of architects. So that's, I think, fundamentally where we need to work at.
And I think with that, you have just hit the nail swift down, head straight into the wood. I hope people realize what's being spoken of here, not take offense, and try to undo all the things that is kind of taking its toll on the media. So, I believe we have covered all the things that I wanted to ask you, but before we close for today, is there anything apart from what you have discussed today that you want to say for my audience?
So people assume that journalism and what an article that you write is like the final piece. Whereas that's not the case. Journalism is really, it's a work in progress. And every day is not as good as your last day. So I would think journalism is really a way that you persuade society, you persuade the world to think of a different way that life can be. So, of course, reporting is one aspect of it, but another aspect of it is for you to connect the dots. That's what journalists do. They connect the dots for you. They kind of create these social maps for you. And so, on one hand, today journalism it's like breaking news, and that is journalism. That isn't journalism. It is about getting it right. It's about being able to get your facts right. It's about getting simple things like the spelling of the person that you're interviewing right. And so it's those very basic things that I think need to be emphasized. And I can't emphasize it enough because we see so often that those basic things are not in place. And so then if I haven't got the name of the person I'm interviewing correct, then there is a fundamental flaw in the way that I'm gathering my information, in the way that I'm doing my fact checking, in the way that I am as a person, how disciplined I am, how thorough I am. And it's all those things that matter in journalism. So it's like how you detail a building. So you need to come with that kind of creative mindset to know that each day is a new day. I mean, you've made your mistakes yesterday, you possibly goofed up on something, but today is a new day. And that's the joy of journalism because, like, for instance, this morning I didn't know that there was a story I was going to write. It's somewhere in the middle of the day I figured that, okay, this is what I'm going to do. So there is never a day when I'm like, this is what I have today. It's very rare that you plan out your days. So if you want to be a journalist, be prepared for the unexpected, but be thorough in what you want to do and be curious all the time. Keep asking questions. And it doesn't matter whether you sound foolish or not, just keep asking questions anyway. And in today's time and age, when the TV is in your room, and it tells you everything, so why will anyone pick up a newspaper? So the question that you need to then ask is, so what? Something has happened, so what? How does that make a difference to a person's life? And it's that difference that we need to bring out in the kind of stories we do. So yeah, that's basically it.
Right, right. I think that counts as major motivation. I don't know about my audience and wouldn't want to speculate, but listening to this last part just gave me goosebumps. Yeah, I still get those folks. So yeah, with that, we are closing the session for today. It has been a very fruitful discourse on the coverage of architecture and built environment in the mainstream and also multiple things related to the same. Thanks to you for bringing the insights to this series and also for your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's been a pleasure. It's really lovely.
Thank you, ma'am. So, wrapping the episode now, big thank you to Shiny Varghese, ma'am, from me and my audience again. A lot, many episodes lined up, so folks, keep your eyes and ears open. Do follow the media handles, please. The description has all the links for you. And also share this episode with your friends and foes. So, that's that, folks. We are closing for the day. Stay safe and stay happy. Till the next time. Cheers.